This is the Poetry Magazine podcast for April 2015. I'm Don Scherer, editor of Poetry Magazine.
And I'm Lindsay Garbutt, assistant editor for the magazine. On the podcast, we listen to a few poems in the current issue. This month, we're going to hear from Jamila Woods.
My daddy's forehead got its own area code.
Tara Betts.
If you be hands thrown up, then I be yes, yes, y'all.
And Christiana Ray Colon.
You don't have to hold your breath. You don't have to behave.
This month, Haymarket Books is publishing an anthology called The Breakbeat Poets, New American Poetry in the Age of Hip Hop. I mention this because the April issue of Poetry Magazine is mostly devoted to a selection of poems from the breakbeat poets.
Breakbeat is the syncopated rhythm you hear in hip hop and some electronic music. Breakbeat poetry is strongly influenced by hip hop, but that oversimplifies the wide variety of poems featured in the April issue.
We've had a few of these poets in poetry before, but the vast majority of them are new to the magazine. So we owe a debt of gratitude to Kevin Koval, who edited the Breakbeat Poets, along with Nate Marshall and Quraysh Ali Lansana.
Quraysh Ali Lansana has an essay in the issue about how his life and poetry have been shaped by hip-hop. We recently asked him to come into our studio at the Poetry Foundation and talk us through the music of his youth.
In 1979, Rapper's Delight changed my life as a 14-year-old in sleepy Enid, Oklahoma. I said a hip. The language gave me a confidence in my 14-year-old attempt at swagger. The words themselves, the syllables, the sounds could be music. The words themselves could become rhythm. And the words then became more than vehicles for ideas, that the words themselves became the point. The record store that at the time sold black music was on the black side of town. And it was not a place where many white folks in Enid ventured, certainly not after dark, and generally not at all. Hold your hands up in the sky and wave around from side to side. I recall going to a party in ninth grade at the home of a friend, a white boy, a white dude, and I brought with me the Curtis Blow vinyl. He actually asked me to bring the Curtis Blow record, and they just loved the album. What is this hip-hop? What is this rap? And can you get us more? Hard times spreading just like the flu. You know I caught it just like you. I wandered from hip-hop in the early 80s. Hip-hop was not speaking to me in regard to politics and economics and racial parity. And so I listened to a great deal of two-tone British ska music and other music because of the race and class issues in the lyrics. Towards the end of the 80s, 88 in particular, I was turned on to Public Enemy. I got a letter from the government. Chuck D could spin a story, but the tale was rooted in the politics and the injustice and the racial iniquities of being black and male in this country and thinking outside of the status quo. I was able to regain a sense that hip-hop could move me, and the ways in which Chuck played with language, with syntax, with rhythm, reaffirmed what I accessed when I first heard Rapper's Delight in a new way now, though, because now the words themselves had real meaning for me. They were about change and they were about education as well. When I first heard Nas's Illmatic, it changed hip-hop again in many ways for me, particularly One Love. It's a letter. It's a series of letters that Nas has written to his homies who are locked up, who are incarcerated. Dear Bourne, you'll be out soon, stay strong. Out in New York, the same shit is going on. The crackheads talking. It talks about life in the streets in Queensbridge and housing projects where he grew up, and the real life and lives of black folks on the streets and the grind, some in gang life. It has a reality and a kind of intimacy and detail of African-American existence. And that's why I always consider that album a very, very amazing and remarkable and groundbreaking album of poetry. My two oldest sons have spent the last 5 years or so immersed in writing poems and writing rhymes, and have spent the last 10 years or so immersed in hip hop. They are poets able to express and articulate themselves in touch with their emotions and their feelings in ways that I certainly did not possess as a 15 and 17 year old. Because of hip hop. I don't think that it's because of dad.
Jamila Woods is a member of the Dark Noise Collective, a group of spoken word artists, and she's also a Pushcart Prize nominee.
Her poem in the April issue is called Daddy Dozens.
So I grew up in a big family, and we a lot of times show our love for each other by making fun of each other. And my dad has the biggest forehead you have ever seen in your entire life. So I wrote this poem for him.
Well, I hope he has a sense of humor and that he loves poetry. Here's Jamila Woods reading Daddy Dozens.
My daddy's forehead is so big, we don't need a dining room table. My daddy's forehead's so big, his hat size is equator. So big, it's a five head. Tyra Banks burst into tears when she see my daddy's forehead. My daddy's forehead got its own area code. My daddy baseball cap got stretch marks. My daddy pillowcase got craters. His eyebrows need GPS to find each other. My daddy forehead lives in two time zones. Planets confuse my daddy forehead for the sun. Couch cushions lose quarters in the wrinkles in my daddy forehead. My daddy's so smart. He falls asleep with the movie on and wake up soon as the credits start to roll. My daddy's so smart, he performs surgery on his own ingrown toenail. Mama was not impressed, but my daddy got brains. My daddy know exactly how to drive me to my friend's house without looking at no map. My daddy born here. He's so smart. He know the highways like the wrinkles in his forehead. He know the free clinics like the gray hairs on his big ass head. My daddy's so smart, he wear a stethoscope and a white coat. My daddy drive to work in a minivan only slightly bigger than his forehead. That's just how my daddy rolls. My daddy got swag. My daddy dance to single ladies in the hallway. My daddy drink a small coffee, cream and sugar. My daddy drink a whole can of Red Bull. My daddy eat a whole pack of sour Skittles and never had a cavity. My daddy's so smart. He got a pull-out couch in his office. Got a mini fridge there, too. Got a cell phone and a pager and an email address where I can leave him messages when he's not at home. My daddy's not home. Mama saves a plate that turns cold. But when my daddy does come home, he got an office in his bedroom, too. Computer screen, nightlight. Mama says she can't sleep right, but my daddy got work. My daddy at work, at home, in the attic. With the TV on, in the dark, from the front yard, through the windows, you can see him working. Glass flickering. My house got its own forehead, glinting, sweaty, in the evening, while my daddy at work, at home, in his own area code, a whole other time zone.
Well, this is a brilliant transformation of the dozens, which is kind of a traditional bit of verbal jousting. It requires verbal ingenuity and high-spirited articulations on many subjects. And in this particular poem, the rhythms are just marvelous, as you heard. The detail is exquisite. I think there's something about the repetition of daddy, my daddy, that is the kind of lively thing you would wish for a daughter to engage in. And yet, as is true of all of these poets, there's a real literary foundation for it. I think some readers or listeners might think of Sylvia Plath's far more acidic view of her daddy in that famous poem. But here, I just think you get a whole sense of a life in this family from these Daddy Dozens. And the performative aspect brings everything to life and you engage with it. I mean, you're just there.
You're right. It starts out very humorous and maybe it could be just anyone's daddy who has a large forehead. Yeah. But then you start to learn more about their family and their relationship and the things they do, how he takes his coffee, the songs that he dances to, mm-hmm. The car that he drives. It starts to become kind of poignant when you read,
"My daddy's not home. Mama saves a plate that turns cold."
And then at the end of the poem,
"From the front yard, through the windows, you can see him working."
You're seeing the father from outside of the house. He's in his own kind of isolated area, continuing mm-hmm. to work.
"My house got its own forehead, glinting, sweaty."
His forehead becomes the forehead of the house.
He's the head of the forehead of the household.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, the humor in it is very generous and affectionate. But there's a lot more to it than that. And another literary analog is Robert Hayden's poem about the winter Sundays is very alive, where you sense that the father must live for the sake of his family kind of outside the margins of the bonds of affection. There's this sort of, in a way, sad and lonely mystery of what he's got to do to kind of keep things going, which he seems admirably to do. This is a father who does come home, and when he comes home, there's an office even in his bedroom, and the computer screen is the nightlight, and daddy has to work. He just has to work, and he's working all the time, working on something. And it's that great looming mystery that I think is at the heart of the poem, that in the end, where the poem, as you say, changes and it modulates from these long rhythmic lines to a very spare final two lines, where he's in his own area code, a whole other time zone. Mm-hmm. And you have the sense that he's always going to be in that other place, but he's also going to be in the place that's at the heart of the poem, which is in the heart of the poet.
Tara Betts is the author of a book of poems called Arc and Hue, and of a chapbook called The Greatest, an homage to Muhammad Ali.
Her poem in the April issue is called Hip Hop Analogies, after Miguel and Erica Badu.
This poem came out of just thinking about analogies and how they're written, especially for standardized tests. There are these two songs in particular that kind of do an analogy that relates to hip hop culture. There's the song Sure Thing by Miguel. You'll be the match, I will be a fuse. Boom, painter, baby. And there's another song called Love of My Life by Erykah Badu. Basically, Love of My Life is like her love song to hip hop, and she's at the end saying, "If you be boy, then I be girl." And I was like, what if we had analogies that just made allusions to things in hip hop?
Here's Tara Betts reading Hip Hop Analogies after Miguel and Erykah Badu.
If you be the needle, I be the LP. If you be the buffed wall, I be the Krylon. If you be the backspin, I be the break. If you be the head nod, I be the baseline. If you be a Philly, I be the razor. If you be microphone, then I be palm. If you be cipher, then I be beatbox. If you be hands thrown up, then I be yes, yes, y'all. If you be throwback, then I be remix. If you be footwork, then I be uprock. If you be turntable, then I be crossfader. If you be downtown C-train, then I be southbound redline. If you be shell toes, then I be hoodie. If you be freestyle, then I be peacebook. If you be sharpie, then I be tag. If you be boy, then I be girl who wants to sink samples into classic.
Well, in a way, the sampling here is of this life. I mean, you get so much. The lines are short and they sort of bob and weave a little bit. That rhythm where there's got to be a pause in the middle balances everything out so beautifully. It's so finely wrought. And I like that the poem, instead of wanting in its structure to have an analogous form to the rhythms of hip hop, has that rhythm of a traditional sounding poem, which to me is ingenious. You know, the temptation would be to take the rhythms that you hear and learn from the music and put them into the poem. And here, you know, she stripped everything way back. And so that back and forth is really lovely. I find there's a warmth to it that just sort of makes me feel very happy. What really, really comes through is a sense that a person can emerge in her difference and yet connect with somebody who's almost an opposite. And that's a lovely thing that the poem accomplishes.
If you be turntable, then I be crossfader. If you be downtown C-train, then I be southbound redline.
The sounds in this poem are really great, and she emphasizes those. I especially loved her reading the train lines of as if she were the announcer there. Mm-hmm. The visual images are also really fantastic in this poem.
If you be microphone, then I be palm.
The image of the palm wrapped around the microphone is really a beautiful image to me as well.
Well, it's sensuous too.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But then also the if you be hand throw up, then I be yes, yes, y'all. It's just like there's so much enthusiasm and joy in this poem. She captures so well with such short lines and really imaginative pairings.
Yeah, and I think the kind of thing that a poem can really contribute in the long term is to establish a vocabulary that other poets inherit. And I don't know for sure, and I'm not going to check, but this could be one of the early appearances in poetry of words like Krylon, you know, the spray paint, or terms like peace book or uprock. I think that becomes a kind of lasting contribution to take the language that's around you and then to sort of put it in, not enshrine it, but make it live within a poem. I mean, that happens from Chaucer all the way forward, where the language inherits uses of words established by poets for the first time somewhere. And I think Tara in this poem and in lots of her work really does that. I think she's very diligent in that way, and it's a very striking thing.
Yeah, and the poem is very self-conscious about that. I mean, the end is,
who wants to sink samples into classic?
Like, yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what's happening.
That's the ambition of the poet, and it's just marvelous to see somebody pull it off like this. Christina Rey Colon writes for the theater as well as for the page. Her play Octagon received Arizona Theater Company's 2014 National Latino Playwriting Award and will have its world premiere in London this fall.
A few years ago, Colon was teaching at the Hands-on Stanzas program at the Poetry Center of Chicago.
I was teaching a group of eighth graders that really gave me a hard time throughout the whole semester. And I thought they hated me, and I was really, really surprised at the end of the year when they asked me if I would write a poem to perform at their eighth grade graduation.
Well, she did write that poem, and here it is.
A remix for remembrance. This is for the boys whose bedrooms are in the basement, who press creases into jeans, who carve their names in pavement. For the girls whose names are ancient, ancestry is sacred. The Aztec and the Mayan gods Abuela used to pray with. This is for the dangerous words hiding in the pages of composition notes, holy books, and Sanskrit. This is for the patients who wait for medication, for the mothers microwaving beans and rice at day's end. This is for the marching bands and girls at quinceañeras, the skaters and the riders whose moms are eloteras, laughing, cops don't scare us, we sag so elders fear us, we will rewrite your textbooks in our own language if you dare us. This is for the Sarahs, the Angelicas, the Shawns, the Beatrices, Paolas, the Danielas, and the Dons. We scribble sunlight in the margins of horizons with our songs, for all the voices tangled with the silence on our tongues. Fireworks at dark, rivals in the park, tired shirts that sweat your scent on hangers in the closet. For the boys who fix the faucet while their sister fixes coffee because mommy had to leave for work at 6 a.m. and laundry isn't folded yet. You don't have to hold your breath. You don't have to behave. Stage your own rebellion. Paint canvases with rage and religion and prayers for the pilgrims sleeping in the train cars at the borders and their children. Filibust the Senate and bust markers on the pink line. Stay in the prosecution's case and force the judge to resign. Force the crowd to rewind the lyrics you invented. Speak away the limits to the heights of your existence. Be a witness. Be a record. Be a testament. A triumph. Set your poems flying in the glitter of the planets. Feed open mouths with truth. The truth is, we are famished. The universe is starving for the symphonies you play, clarinets and thunder, and the syllables you say are the instruments. You are infinite. Stretch your hands to heaven. Let your throat throttle the rhythms of all your fallen brethren. Your legacy is present. Your history is now. You are the 10th degree of sound. You are the nephews of the sky. You are the bass line and the hi-hat and the snare drum and the cry of red Septembers. You are the architects of winter. You are the builders of the roads that you're told you don't remember. You are the builders of the roads that you're told you don't remember. You are the builders of the roads that you're told you don't remember. Skate City Hall to splinters and tell them you remember. Send diamonds to your islands and tell them you remember. Cast your poems in the river and tell them you remember. Find your God inside your mirror and tell her you remember.
What's so striking to me about this poem is the music of it, the rhymes and the off rhymes, and the way on the page, sometimes they're at the end of the line, sometimes they're in the middle of the line. You are just following this thread throughout the poem that she weaves so beautifully. You can really see the hip-hop influence in this poem.
And not only that, I think there's a notion that maybe in our skeptical times can get lost of poetry as a gift. Imagine being an eighth grader, and after a tough year, you're given the gift of this poem. You sit and hear this. I mean, I think you would remember that all your life. Something of that would be transformative in that moment. And the rhythms make it memorable. And as you point out, that is something that you absorb without even sort of intending it to, which is probably what those kids did. Without even knowing it, they were being given the rhythms and meanings embedded in them in the poem, even repeating things.
You are the builders of the roads that you're told you don't remember. You are the builders of the roads that you're told you don't remember.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was going to ask what you think of that line that's repeated three times. Why emphasize that line in particular?
Well, I think because there's a lot of history in the poem building up to it before she uses that word remember, which is rung like a school bell at the end of the poem. So you have the Aztec and Mayan gods, and you have the moms, and you have the cops, and you have margins of horizons where all these voices and songs take place. That's the now, the rivals in the parks and the fireworks at dark. And in a way, as you're moving along with the rhythms of the poem, it reaches its high watermark there. I mean, what's the point of the rhythm? It's for you to remember. What are you going to remember? Well, you're going to remember what's happening and what you see. But what also can be remembered is what you can go out into the world and accomplish. In other words, she's saying to these young people, you're the architects of winter.
Stretch your hands to heaven. Let your throat throttle the rhythms of all your fallen brethren. Your legacy is present. Your history is now.
That's something she wants them to hear in the sounds that are everywhere, the bass line and hi-hat and snare drum and cry of red September. So they are supposed to be kind of energized by these rhythms and then go out in the world and build the roads to whatever the future might hold and the places that might be worth living in.
I couldn't help picturing that road as also a road to the past, that you create your own history, you create your own through line from the past to the future.
We will rewrite your textbooks in our own language if you dare us.
The idea that you could write your own history,
yeah,
that's not taught in school.
But it's lived, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Even that line that just stays with me and we printed it on the back cover.
Cast your poems in the river and tell them you remember.
I mean, you have to think about it a little bit. I mean, who are you telling you remember? Well, everybody, but you're telling the poems too. That's a beautiful invocation of poetry itself as a tradition, mm-hmm, alongside music and history, that the poems will remember and that you tell the poems that you remember. That's the work of a poet. I just like the idea that you have this group of eighth graders who go out into the world and they're telling people they remember. I mean, that brings to life the kind of responsibility that ordinarily you might say should be taught in a civics class, but here that lesson is given in poetry. You can read all the poems you just heard and many more in the April 2015 issue of Poetry Magazine, or online at poetrymagazine.org.
Let us know what you thought of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org.
The Poetry Magazine podcast is recorded by Ed Herman and produced by Curtis Fox.
The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. I'm Lindsay Garbett.
And I'm Don Scher. Thanks for listening.